Tom Gimbel's the founder and CEO at LaSalle Network and regularly joins us on the Wintrust Business Lunch. This is Mental Health Awareness Month. Tom, I'm glad you're talking about this today.
Well, I think it's become less and less of a stigma over the course of the past 10, 20, 25 years, and it's silly that more companies and more people aren't. And, you know, my feeling on this stuff, and I think you know me well enough, John, is it's not about acknowledging it in whatever the month is that we celebrate any ignored issue in the past. It's the other 11 months that it doesn't get talked about. And mental health is, we all have a screw loose somewhere. It's just how big the screw is and how big the hole that it goes into and affects us. And we should be able to talk about it at work, and work should stand behind us and help us get better.
Is it hard for employers or managers to do that, though, since there are privacy issues as well?
Well, I mean, you have HIPAA where you can't disclose what somebody doesn't want disclosed with their medical records. But, I mean, I can only speak as the CEO of a 300-person company where we do well over $100 million in sales, and I readily disclose to my staff that I've gone to therapy for years. And my head of HR talks about being in therapy and taking meds when she needs to, and a lot of my management team. So it's, ironically enough, we're big on winning awards and culture. We've actually been named one of the mentally healthiest companies by the American Psychopathic Association. So it's like, I believe in this. I believe if you talk about you're crazy, that's normal. If you don't talk about you're crazy, then you're really crazy.
So do you have, like, ways that managers should engage their employees? Say you find somebody is struggling or not performing well, or maybe you have some suspicion. What should people do?
Well, I think, number one, it's really, now we're getting into what the real role of a human resources department should be, is proactive employee relations, being there to understand, having people who are trained in what's accessible, how to find therapy, how to talk to people, how to ask questions, not mandates. So I think that's really important. I think you get employees, managers, that it's hard. And do employees want to open up? And so you got to have managers who aren't intimidated by their bosses to talk and say, you know what, I'm a little bit worried about Jane or Mike. And I think if we could figure out a way to talk to them, can we tag team an approach for who can get through to the person the most? Because sometimes people are scared. Sometimes they're embarrassed. Sometimes they don't realize it's affecting work. I mean, this is no different than anything else in life. We don't realize that the things that are bogging us down are actually having a negative effect in other parts of our lives.
Yeah.
And work is the one that pays the bills. And so now you got this dynamic that if you can't function at an efficient level at work, you're jeopardizing everything else, and that's scary.
The hybrid world probably makes it harder to get your arms around this, I would imagine.
Yeah, I think the hybrid world is not good for a variety of reasons. I think you know how I feel about mental health from a standpoint of being isolated and working alone, but the standpoint of, it used to be that if somebody had a panic attack or they cried in the office from whatever the issue might be, you'd see it. Now they turn off their camera and you don't know. So it's harder to help people if you're not in the office and if they work from home. And now imagine, you know, work used to be this place that if your home life or personal life was kind of in the doghouse, so to speak, work was a refuge from that. And now we've got people that, yeah, it's great that you don't have to commute and this, that, or the other thing. But if one part of your life isn't good, you don't get to escape it and go to the other part. And that's a real, real emotional danger.
Mm. Any other ideas you have about this, Tom? I mean, I guess, you know, here's one thing that I think is also missing, and it's part of the hybrid world. Maybe it's part of the world if you have 300 employees. I'd like to see managers walking the halls, popping into offices. But you can't check on people if you're either not there physically or if you're not there remotely.
You're 100% correct, and that's the real problem. You can really tell a lot by seeing someone's facial expression and their eyes and their smile or lack thereof. And you know, I said to somebody, I don't know, maybe a month or two ago, I looked at them, I go, "You okay?" And they go, "Why do you ask?" I go, "Your eyes look sad." And we talked for about a half hour about some things that were going on in their life. And I think that those are the things that are missed. And I, you know how I feel about this. Work is a congregation. The office is a congregation. It's a place where people can rely on one another where they wouldn't have known each other someplace else. And I think we've just created this, just like Republicans and Democrats, we've created this animosity that's so big of work from home, work in the office, and we've really lost something as a society that takes up a third of our Monday through Fridays. And I think that's crazy. And I think that when it comes to mental health, we need to be all in. And I think companies that provide great health insurance, companies that provide group therapy, companies that eliminate the stigma by having leaders and executives talk about their own challenges is what's going to make it better.
Tom's the founder and CEO at LaSalle Network, thelasallenetwork.com. Okay, Tom, we'll talk again soon. Thanks for your thoughts today.
Stay dry, warm, and healthy, John.
Yeah, man, those are the big three today. Farron Dawgs joins us now, the founder and CEO at Harrison Wallace Financial Group. Farron, talk to me about the Dow. Where is it? Why is it doing what it's doing?
Well, good afternoon, John. Thanks for having me. And it's just another fun day in the markets. I think there's just some concerns over, obviously, the banking system, the slowdown in the JOLTS report that we saw, the Fed, and oh, by the way, there are earnings coming out. So we have a lot going on, and I really believe that the biggest concern right now is the banking issue. I think there's concern that this contagion will continue. I think a lot of people thought that, you know, once the First Republic situation was handled, that we wouldn't see this. But we are starting to see some of the regional banks see some of their depositors, you know, exit the door. And if they don't have assets, they're going to have a hard time doing business. So whether it's warranted or not, I believe these regional banks are kind of being overlooked for the larger banks because there's perceived safety in the larger banks and depositors are becoming concerned.
It's funny because we thought that we wanted to, after what was it, 2008, create a system where the banks would be too big. We would no longer rely on banks too big to fail. But
right,
we're now allowing Chase to acquire a mid-sized bank. But the law did allow for that, right? This isn't necessarily a bad thing that Chase is rescuing them, correct?
No, it's not a bad thing. And they are obtaining some pretty solid assets there.
Yeah.
But as this continues, to your point, it's like the whole point was to have diversification in our choice as consumers. And also, you know, some banks take on more credit risk than other banks. And as a depositor or even an investor, we may not want to have that risk. So it allowed us more opportunity and options. And, you know, now we're starting to see that whole funnel start to happen again, where there's just natural gravitation towards larger because it's perceived to be safer. Whether that's true or not is to be determined, but that's a perception.
Well, if you're fortunate enough, and maybe a lot of businesses find themselves in this situation, you've got more than $250,000 in an institution. Mm-hmm. Would the advice be to open up multiple accounts with multiple institutions? What's an investor, if they've got $251,000, to do?
Mm-hmm. That's a great point and great question. And if you do have that and it's under the same ownership, if it is a business account, you really would be well served to look at opening accounts at multiple institutions, because currently, you know, that's the FDIC insurance there. And that stands true for a consumer as well. You know, there is discussion about insuring 100% of deposits, but, you know, that will come at it as at an expense, of course.
Well, we're sort of doing that anyway, at least in the last two instances we have. But that's not the policy, right? And they don't want to advertise that, even if it was, huh?
Exactly, right. And so for people in that situation, they should watch their deposits, and if they get up against those limits, they may in fact want to look at other opportunities. So,
what are your thoughts about the debt ceiling and the negotiation that so far really isn't taking place between Republicans in the Congress and the president?
Yeah, I've had a chance to look over the Limit Save and Grow Act that was just recently passed in the House. And, you know, I think it's common sense to a point. You know, does it go far enough? Well, some would say no. and some would say it goes too far, but they are allowing an increase in the debt ceiling up to a certain limit or a certain day. And that gives us a little bit of chance to rework things, look at our budgets as a nation and as a country, and make some adjustments for that rather than having to do it all at once. So it does give that wiggle room. And I equate it much to a household. You know, if all of a sudden our debt service is going up and we don't have the revenue coming in that we did, and inflation has caused a little pinch in our pocket on the necessities, well, then we have to look to some of the discretionary items that we may have to scale back on or cut back on. And, you know, as a country, we should be doing that as well. I mean, clearly we haven't been doing a very good job of that over many, many years. But I think it's time that we start taking a little bit more of a common sense approach to it. Mm-hmm. And I hope they all get to the table and get this hammered out well before we're up against a potential default.
I think I hear what you're saying, and I understand the president's position that the consequences of not resolving this in time are so catastrophic that it's a non-negotiable issue. But guess what? They've got the votes, so you're going to have to negotiate. Mm-hmm. And there are some things that I think the Republicans are asking for in this House bill that I would give on even if I didn't like it. Like, okay, we're mm-hmm. not going to rescue student loans, but I would draw mm-hmm. a line in the sand about climate change and fossil fuels. And mm-hmm. I don't know that Republicans would dicker with me on that, but I don't mm-hmm. want to give away the candy store here either. So it's kind of hard mm-hmm. to know how far the president should go or how much ground, mm-hmm. especially considering the nature of the conservative wing of the Republican Party, it's hard to know how far the Congress should go either.
Mm-hmm. Well, and those are all valid points, but it's hard to know what's up for negotiation if you won't come to the table. And so I have heard earlier today, it looks like there is a door opening for that discussion to start happening. And as I mentioned, I sure hope it happens well before we run into a situation where this could be a default situation. And you know how it goes, John. Usually it's up to the 11th hour, and then all of a sudden yeah. concessions decide to be made. But that wreaks havoc on a lot of people's situations and the markets.
Farron Dogs follows all of that, founder and CEO at Harrison Wallace Financial Group. Thanks, Farron.
Thanks, John. Appreciate it.
Because Dennis Rodkin is here telling me about his college reunion. The residential real estate reporter at Crain's, ChicagoBusiness.com, which explains why his voice is so croaky. It's not because you're ill necessarily, but the allergens you picked up in Southern California have stayed with you all the way to here.
That's the souvenir I brought back, yeah, is this throat.
No lousy t-shirt to boot?
I did actually buy a sweatshirt, but this is the more visible. Yeah, you've got one.
I was telling you, I went back to Carbondale a few weeks ago with a few friends, and first time we'd all been to SIUC, and I am wearing this very expensive. This pullover cost probably what my first semester of tuition did
yeah.
at Carbondale.
I bought one of those when I was out there.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about the real estate business. That's what you write about. As home prices drop in more big metros, they're still rising in Chicago. Chicago avoided the yo-yo effect of the pandemic. So maybe we're in a better place, huh?
We are. Our prices are still going up. The rate of growth is shrinking all the time. But the thing to keep in mind is our prices were booming in 2021 and 2022. Still rising above that. If you're a seller, that's pretty amazing. You're still making more money than people made last year at the height of an epical housing boom.
We still have some pretty expensive property moving in the Chicago area too, don't we?
We do. The weekend I was gone, two houses sold for $5 million or more.
What's this condo at the top of the Aqua doing?
This one is not selling. This is came on the market in 2015 at $6 million. Still unsold at $4.5 million. It's not on the full two top floors. It's on half of 80 and 81, which are the highest floors.
St. Regis we're talking about?
St. Regis, yeah. Highest floors you can live on are 80 and 81, and this has half of each of those. They were asking $6 million for it. as I said, in 2015. Now asking 4.5.
Really?
Cannot move it.
Yeah. Well, I really, like, wow, did they come down? But they're still looking for north of 4. So this would be the developer. This isn't from a previous owner,
right? No, this is an owner. This is somebody who bought it from the developer.
Wow.
If they sold it.
They weren't there very long. I mean, the building just got finished a few years ago.
They bought it all new in 2011.
Oh, it's been there that long?
And yeah. Yeah, it was finished in, I'm sorry, you said St. Regis. No, this is Aqua. This is the earlier building.
The other one behind
which
it.
Was finished in 2009. There are higher floors to live on at St. Regis. Same architect, Jeannie Gang and Studio
it's
Gang.
A beautiful building.
It really is. It's the one, for people who don't know, that looks like water has eroded the sides. Highest floors you can live on, 80 and 81. They put these two units together. They spent less than what they're now asking, but they've been trying to sell it for 7 years.
Wonder if part of the problem is not maybe the idiosyncrasies of the building, but living downtown. Although there are people that want to live downtown. I just met a real nice couple on our trip, and they live downtown. They decided to rent for a year or two in the city and give it a try. 5 years later, they're not going anywhere. They love being able to walk to Millennium Park or the restaurants.
And did they ultimately buy?
They're still renting.
They're still renting. I think that's what a lot of people are doing now. Pardon me.
They're 5 years in, which I don't know why they're not, in fact, building a little equity. But anyway, keep going.
Well, unfortunately, it's very difficult to build equity in downtown condos. We are seeing, though we see a lot sell, we're seeing them sell at $10 and $12 million. We have a large number of condos in the downtown area that sell for 10 years ago prices, sell for less than what people paid for them a decade ago.
What's it like in the neighborhoods generally in the city, would you say?
Still doing very well. John, this is starting to kill me. How bad does this sound?
I just noticed that you sounded a little oakier there for a minute. I think the question is, how does it feel?
I feel fine. I just sound like a frog.
Thank you. I can listen to you any day.
Croak, croak.
In the neighborhoods.
In the neighborhoods, doing pretty well. One thing I'm watching that I can't figure out is house prices, not condo prices. House prices in the city are the weak point. Suburbs going up, house or condo. Condos go flat in price from a year ago. House prices down about 8% from a year ago. And that doesn't fit that narrative about downtown crime. Because houses aren't downtown.
Yeah.
Houses are generally in the neighborhoods. And I have been looking. I don't have an answer yet. The one thing that I had earlier this year was there was a mayoral election coming. So maybe people were just holding off.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's enough. And that's gone on for a few. That's been going on all of 2023.
Well, it seems to me that if you've been living in the city of Chicago for a while and you want to buy a house, it may be pre-pandemic or pre-George Floyd or pre-something, you would have considered a house in Andersonville or one of the more comfortable neighborhoods. But maybe now, considering the landscape I just described, people are like, look, if I'm going to make the jump to buy a house with a patch of dirt, I'm going to go one ring further out. I'm going to get out of the city where I can get maybe a better price, and I'll avoid some of these issues in Chicago.
That may well be, but the one problem we have, the one reason this is very hard to explain, is the number of sales is down in the city and the suburbs about the same from the boom years. So houses are still selling in the city, and they're selling in the numbers that they're selling in the suburbs, but at far lower prices. And I just can't get my arms around it. I've asked experts, I've asked real estate agents, and really what we're doing is watching for a few more months to see if it was a momentary thing or if there's some weakness we suddenly can figure out.
Well, interest rates aren't helping you, but they're not killing you right now. But if you have a house to sell in the city of Chicago, then maybe ride it out for a little longer would be your advice.
I would. Inventory is so tight in all forms of housing, condo or house or townhouse. That people probably think, oh, I can put this out there and get a great price. And it is true in most of those other categories.
Yeah,
and it is also, one thing I should say is, you said Andersonville. It's not true in some of those super hot neighborhoods that house prices are down. I'm looking at citywide, the average is down, and it's perplexing. I do not have an answer. And, my job is to find the answer.
Well, maybe not instantly. So Andersonville and Lincoln Park, and you could click off a few other neighborhoods, are probably somewhat insulated from this. I would imagine the Gold Coast is suffering, though.
The Gold Coast has had a problem with house sales. There was just one this weekend at $5 million, but it's very hard to get those mansions sold on the Gold Coast. One of the things I did is I went neighborhood by neighborhood looking at house prices to see if, just as an example, it's all on the northwest side that prices are down, or it's all on the southeast side, and it's not. There's no pattern. So I don't know yet what it is. But I do want to say again, it doesn't fit into people's story that, you know, crime is killing Chicago, because the crime problem is primarily downtown, and condo prices haven't been suffering.
Downtown.
Except for that one we talked about
in the south and west side. Yeah, right. It's a 12:45. I'm going to get you a glass of water.
That would be great.
Maybe some lemon and honey, although we don't have any, but what a nice gesture anyway. And then let's pick it up. I wanted to talk to you about a few other issues, including something that's been happening in Oak Park. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. More business news now with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. While other companies are reducing office space and embracing remote work, Feldco is doubling its workspace. The windows, siding, doors, and roofing company has leased 36,000 square feet in Rosemont and relocated its headquarters there. Cranes reports Feldco has leased space in a seven-story building at 6300 North River Road. It's nearly double the size of its current headquarters in Des Plaines. The company's planning to sell the Des Plaines property and rent a portion of it back for some of its operation. Roughly 200 employees will work at the Rosemont location. CVS Health has completed its acquisition of Chicago-based Oak Street Health. The $10.6 billion deal will allow the pharmacy chain to expand into primary care. Oak Street Health's network focuses on Medicare patients and low-cost care. CVS is based in Rhode Island. The University of Chicago Booth School of Business has received a $100 million donation from entrepreneur and alum Ross Stevens. The school will rename its PhD program after Stevens. The donation will fund personalized coaching programs in wellness, mental health support, public speaking, and professional development. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Now the business of food. Here's Steve Alexander.
Thank you, and let's dial a farmer. And while it rings, I'll tell you we're sponsored by the Chevy Silverado HD. Experience your life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com.
Hello?
Illinois farmer Chad Lehman is on the phone.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing great, thanks. Sounds like you've got me on speaker.
Yes, I am in a tractor planting beans, if that works for you.
Oh, yeah. Hard at work.
Yeah, you will have some beeps and stuff in the background. You know, it's inherent in these things steering themselves. You have to listen to it a little bit.
Any chance you can take me off speaker?
Yeah. Is this better?
Oh, much better, thanks. I'm calling because you are president of the Illinois Pork Producers Association, and tomorrow is a big day.
Yeah, we're looking forward to it. We're going to have Bacon Day at the Capitol in Springfield.
And yum yum, Illinois Bacon Day is tomorrow, honoring Illinois pig farmers, and a bunch of them will be there in that impressive rotunda.
And we're going to be serving BLTs to the legislators.
Just a savory reminder to the lawmakers of how important the $14 billion pork business is in Illinois.
As you well know, most of our legislators don't come from rural districts, and so it's always a good way for us to share with them what's going on farms and put our best product in front of them in the form of bacon.
There are a number of challenges right now to pork producers, with a 2023 forecast from Rabobank showing consumption of pork is likely to lag the rest of the year because of inflation. And down on the farm, there are other issues, such as finding people willing to come out and work on the farm every day.
You can't do it remotely. You can't do it virtually.
Nope. And other issues, like the cost of feed for the pigs, is putting a squeeze on the farmers. So if you want to help out the pork industry,
we want people, as spring turns to summer here, to get some pork products on the grill. And of course, it's always good to have bacon as part of your portfolio.
Did you say pork-folio?
Yep.
Nicely done. Remember, tomorrow is Bacon Day in Illinois, and also on the calendar today is National Truffle Day and World Tuna Day. I'm Steve Alexander, and that's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Dennis Rodkin, these houses that are having trouble selling, they should get Mike's Landscape Lighting to come out. I guess they say money best spent is in the bathroom and the kitchen, but I do think if you have a place you want to make competitive, that would be a smart thing to do.
Curb appeal counts. Curb appeal always counts.
new home buyers still paying pandemic premium. Now, you wrote about this. Is that what you were talking about earlier? How look at, but in this story, you said the average price of new homes sold in the Chicago area in the first quarter of this year, $439,500.
Yeah.
Wow.
So the story I was talking about before was all houses, including new construction and anything else. This is specifically a report on new construction sales first quarter in the Chicago area from a consultancy in Schaumburg, Tracy Cross. They track what's going on. They saw the price of new single-family homes jump by like 20% at the beginning of the pandemic, or really, at the beginning of the pandemic housing boom, which was several months later. And it hasn't gone back down. There was supply chain interference and all sorts of other things. So you thought that eventually, as all that passed, prices are going to come down. On paper, they have not. But what Tracy Cross says is a lot of the builders are national firms that dominate our home building landscape. They're using discounting in other neighborhoods, other cities, and they say they're using them here. Tracy Cross says they are, but can't reveal to me who they are. I couldn't get any confirmation. On the websites, they don't say, we'll give you 10% off, but that is apparently what they're doing. They're buying down your interest rate so that essentially they're paying points. Once upon a time, you paid points to get a lower interest rate. They're paying points getting you a lower interest rate.
But keeping the price high.
Yeah, so on paper, you're still paying the same price so that somebody can't come in and say, oh, prices are falling.
But your mortgage is less,
yeah.
$439,000.
And this is a tough one to confirm because they're privately held companies.
So I bet you get a fair amount of house in Will County for that, huh?
You do, that $400,000 range, yeah. That's why people go out there. I mean, there is also a big work corridor out there, but yeah, it's no longer drive till you can afford a house. It's really you get a nice big piece of home for $400,000 in Shorewood or Joliet and those places.
In Washington Park, 100,000 red tulips mark the sites of redlining.
You know, this is a fascinating project. Last week, tulips were at their peak. I think these are still blooming. A woman named Amanda Williams, who is a MacArthur Genius Grant holder, she found lots all around the corner of 53rd and Prairie. Three corners are empty, and then one building up from the corner on the fourth side is empty. So she filled all of that empty space with red tulips, 100,000 red tulips. They take the form, or they fill the footprint of the buildings that were torn down there. Redlining, which was a federally supported process of marking areas with a red line. Don't lend mortgages in those places because of the race and ethnicity of the people who live there. The houses are going to go down in value. This was the middle of the 20th century. That leads to disinvestment, which leads to decay of the buildings, which leads to demolition. So you see all these blank spots now. And so what she did is she went in and replaced buildings that were redlined with red tulips. And it was really a beautiful sight, 100,000 of them.
You can read more about this wherever you find Dennis Rodkin's stuff, the residential real estate reporter at Crain's. ChicagoBusiness.com is one way to access his writing. It's good to see you. It's good to hear you. Less today than in previous days.
I think that's probably true.
You get over those allergies, but thanks for fighting through it. It's always good to hear you.
Thanks, John.
That's Dennis Rodkin.